Good morning, everyone. Let's begin with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Gurudeva, Paramahansa Yogananda, saints of all religions, beloved Swamiji, we lovingly bow before you all. Divine Mother, in moments of great challenge, help us to stay attuned to all of your divine qualities, to your love, to your joy, to all of the humorful ways that you present in this world. Help us to keep our consciousness uplifted in an ever greater effort to attune our will to thy will and to merge our consciousness in thee. Om, peace. Amen. Well, this morning I decided to make a confession to all of you. Last week, when I was in those first early days of letting my mind remember that it didn't have so many things to do, and that it could actually slow down a bit, I surfed the web. Now, I know that may not seem like much of anything to most of you, and in fact, I might just be embarrassing myself by admitting in these days when it's so in vogue that it is something that I don't think I've ever done. I mean, maybe never. For some reason, it's just not anything that's drawn me. And I think always there was some little part of my mind that was reminding me that I could get very lost out there. And since the whole goal of my life is to try and be in here, I've decided to try and avoid it. But it happened. Of all things, I was watching some spiritual talk. I don't even remember who or what I was watching. And don't ask me why this happened. I think it was Divine Mother playing a trick on me. But Ellen DeGeneres came up on that little sidebar. I don't know what it's called, but where they tempt you, where Satan can be out there drawing you. And Ellen DeGeneres was about to interview a little 3-year-old boy, and he was about as cute as anything I had ever seen, so I clicked on it. And it turns out this little boy, who is 3 years old, walks out on the stage and just very comfortably takes his seat, and Ellen had said, "This is a little man of even fewer words." And he was utterly precious, and it turns out he was a dancer. And true to what she said, she asked him many questions, and he would give these monosyllabic answers. "So do you really love to dance?" "Yes." "Have you danced a lot?" "Mm-hmm." Just went on for a minute. She would look at us. It was actually very funny. And then she said to him, "Why don't you dance?" And he stood up and did, she called it hip hop. I don't think it was hip hop, but I have to admit I've never seen hip hop, so I don't really know. But I have seen street dancing, and it looked just like street dancing to me. And he had all the moves of a real adult, but in this tiny little body. Anyway, I loved it. So, of course, now I realize the real danger. Instantly, the computer learns what you like. It's almost like it could see me enjoying it. So I pressed one more time. I have to say that because I'm giving myself a little credit. But I pressed on what turned out to be a very famous interview with Johnny Carson interviewing Drew Barrymore. I don't know where you're all watching from. If you don't know, Johnny Carson was a very famous, actually very bright, fabulous, what we call late night show host. I think we still do those in the United States. I can't tell you, other than Stephen Colbert, I don't know who's hosting any of them, but people do. And they're comedians, usually, who have all of these guests that come on. Well, Drew Barrymore, who's, of course, a very famous actress now, was 7 years old at the time. He invites her out on stage. She's this adorable little blonde girl, of course, dressed in all pink and purple. She comes walking out on stage and immediately trips over a step and falls. He jumps up, he helps her to her chair. He said, "Are you okay?" She said, "Yeah." He said, "You know, you're not the first person who's fallen on that step. Even adults do it." She just said, "Oh, I'm sure. Like, that step was not my fault. Why did you put this step there?" But with no arrogance. There was nothing arrogant about her. She was the picture of innocence. She was charming. I'll just share with you a moment or two from the interview, but I do invite you all to Google it and watch it. Johnny Carson and Drew Barrymore. It's about 15 minutes long. I laughed, belly laughs, for 15 minutes, nonstop. At one point, she tells him, she said, I probably shouldn't tell you this. It's a little bit of a secret. She had just filmed. She was a major star in the film E.T. So it was that many years ago. She leans close to him and she says, "There's probably going to be a sequel." And he says, "Oh, is that a secret?" She said, "Probably, but I knew I could tell you." He said, "So I should just keep it between you and me, right? They're on national television. I mean, there's probably millions, I don't think that's hyperbole, millions of people watching." But just in her simplicity, she said to him, "I have been waiting my whole life to come on your show. My whole life. I stay up every night." She's seven. He says, "That's probably why I had to work 7 more years, just so you could get here." She was charming. And I looked at her and I thought, she's not really seven. She's this old spirit, such poise. She was so guileless. Again, such innocence. But for me, what was important is that I laughed and I laughed and I laughed. And when it was all over, I realized how great I was feeling. This was last week. We were already in the midst of this crisis. We were already seeing horrible images from all around the world for many weeks. I hadn't laughed like that in all of those weeks, or maybe 2 months now. It felt so good. Immediately, I was reminded of, I think probably many of you who are watching know that I'm a physician, and it's been a great, great blessing in my life. And because Yogananda himself helped me into medicine, which is a story that I'll tell some other time, I've told it many times, I've just had the great good karma to have one magnificent experience after another in my professional life at every level, but just at the human interaction, at the level of have inspiration to treat people differently than maybe many physicians would. It's just come to me. Well, when I was first starting in medicine, there was a man whose name is Norman Cousins, perhaps many of you have heard of him, he ultimately wrote a book called The Anatomy of an Illness from a Patient's Perspective. He was an extremely bright, very well-known man. He was actually a famous editor. He was a political writer. He was a real peace advocate. He was an advocate for people. He was a good man. Though I have to say, I never read anything about where he was spiritually. But he developed a very serious illness called ankylosing spondylitis. It's an autoimmune disease, which means our bodies start making antibodies towards ourselves or fighting our own cells. That's a whole other interesting topic at some point. Causes severe arthritis. It affects all of the connecting tissues in our body. He was told when he was diagnosed that 1 in 500 people ever get cured. Very serious, very painful, very debilitating disease. Right at that time, a man whose name was Hans Selye was doing a lot of the original work as we know it now on stress and what it does to our body. In 2020, all of this is going to seem so usual to all of you. But in the 1960s and 70s, it had not been thought of in these ways. Nobody was talking about stress and its impact on the body. But Hans Selye did. He started saying that when people are afraid or when they're angry, all of these negative emotions could lead to something called adrenal fatigue. Again, common words now, but not then. So Norman Cousins, who knew of his work, said to himself, if that's true, why can't more uplifting qualities like love, compassion, laughter, he said, just everything that raises our spirit or our mood, because he was really dealing much more from a mind-body perspective. He said, why couldn't that help the adrenals and help to fight illness? So I love this. He went to his primary care doctor and he said, you have nothing to give me in terms of this disease from a medical perspective. I'm going to ask a couple of things of you. First, I want you to start giving me very high doses of vitamin C, because I believe there's a lot of data that says that that could help our immune system. In fact, there was data, and now there's even more. So I'm asking you to step out of the medical model and give me high doses of intravenous vitamin C. He said, then I want you to help me stock up on as many Marx Brothers movies, episodes of a show that used to be on that was called Candid Camera. I don't want to take too much time to go into it, but they would film people. The people didn't know they were being filmed in many different situations. I must say, sometimes I thought it was a little, I didn't always think they were funny, but about 80% of the time, I thought it was hilarious. And then they would get these people's permission to put these shows on the air. It was a television show, I believe, yes. So he watched the Marx Brothers, who were great, great comedians in the very early days of movies, and very well known, and also uplifting humor, simple, good-hearted humor. Nothing was ever mean. There was no meanness, no edges in any of this. And Norman Cousins would spend a lot of time. He quit watching news. He quit watching anything that would cause him stress, anxiety, and he would only watch or read things that would make him laugh. And lo and behold, he found that if he laughed for 10 minutes, If he could really laugh hard for 10 minutes, he could count on 2 hours of pain-free time. And when his pain would start recurring, he would just watch another movie. And this was news at the time, but it was great news. And it really started teaching people about the importance. You know, they didn't use these words, they just used of laughter and of feeling good. I mean, we could now use the words of raising our energy, not letting our energy sink, of creating a magnetic field around us, of good humor, of uplifted energy, of positive thinking, that really prevents a lot of negative energy from coming in. Swamiji himself speaks about this very clearly. I was teaching a class last night on magnetism from Raja Yoga, and Swamiji talks about all of the ways that we can and should create as much of a magnetic protective field, because we are being affected by everybody's magnetism, whether it's positive or negative, whether we know it or not. So when we bring humor into our life in these ways, it is really, it's spiritually uplifting. It's a spiritual quality. It helps us expand. We didn't necessarily think about humor this way. When I was thinking about all this, I was remembering how many times I've listened to talks that Swami Kriyananda gave through our Treasures on the Path. So I'm just listening. I'm not watching him on a video. And I would say in most of the talks, I've never thought about it, so I can't give any numbers, but Swamiji laughs a lot when he's speaking. He laughed, and it was always, even if I didn't know exactly what he was laughing about, I always find myself laughing. It had such a pure quality to it. It was like crystal clear. It was laughter and humor and at the highest degree, very much like what he said about Master all the time, who had such a great sense of humor. But Master never hurt anybody with his humor, and neither did Swamiji. It was just, you could hear and feel Swamiji at the very same moment of teaching us the deepest, most profound, most elevated, expansive spiritual teachings, that he would feel the humor right at the same time. Of course he would, because humor is such a spiritual quality. There's a woman, I'm blocking on her name right now, who has written some books about humor as a way to finding grace. She's a very interesting woman. She was a lawyer. She left law, and she became a minister, and then a stand-up comic. And I've not read her books, but I've read snippets of them online, and I've heard them sometimes online when different people giving talks about spirituality. They would mention her. But she has pointed out that human beings are the only animal that really laugh out loud. Now, we know, we've seen pictures of many animals, I'm sure we all have, where you're pretty sure they're smiling. And I myself have seen many pictures of animals making friends with other animals, the most least likely combinations of animals. I mean, a giraffe and a kitty cat hugging, but real life. I mean, people have taken so many pictures of these, they're heartwarming. So we know animals feel and care and express compassion, but we laugh out loud. And I don't know if it's true that absolutely no other animals do. But at least most animals don't. And she then goes on to make the point, which is true. Laughter, we can hold laughter then as an innate spiritual quality because we are descended right from God consciousness, from super consciousness to energy, which then manifests as all physical reality. So everything that we are comes directly from the divine. So if we laugh, it must mean that laughter is a spiritual quality. You know, another thing that Swamiji does many times in his readings at our Sunday services, and he's quoting, or he's pulled out some quote from the Bible. Many times, he says, people took Christ so seriously. They loved to focus on him as a man who would suffer. And the Bible focuses that way even too, because the Bible does focus on a lot of the way people suffered. But Swamiji points out what a great sense of humor Jesus had. And he's always pointing to it in lines and that Jesus said. And I've said to myself many times, wow, I probably wouldn't have laughed at that. I wouldn't have felt the humor in it. And I'm very grateful to Swamiji that he has pointed this out to us, because Jesus couldn't have come to just represent sorrow and suffering. Of course not. Jesus was a pure manifestation of divine energy. He too came to teach us joy. So it can't be all about suffering. It's just that so many people who were interpreting his words missed it. And Swamiji points that out to us. Swamiji spoke so often about Master's sense of humor. I looked it up last night because I remembered in his biography of Master, one of the salient, there's a whole chapter in there called salient other features or qualities now, I forget what it's called, of Yogananda. And it's a wonderful chapter in his biography of Yogananda to read. He points out, I forget how many now, but I think 40 some, maybe more, of those qualities of Master that he most loved. That may not be a correct way to say it, because of course he connected in love to Master everything about him, but he pointed them out for us so that we could notice those qualities. Number three was his sense of humor. Number three, as he goes through all of it. We've heard, most of us, so many times, all of the jokes that Master used to love to tell. And Swamiji, too, he had his favorite jokes. Swamiji's great sense of humor is something that everybody knew. And he pointed it out to us about Yogananda. Both of them telling us over and over, laugh. Find that simple way to relate to people in the world. You know, laughter to me feels like a pause in all that's happening in the world, not just now, always. It takes us out of the serious part of our reality. It creates an open space. It gives us a moment to expand. And more than anything, when we're laughing, we're breathing. We're taking a deep breath. Breath is energy. Energy is the connecting link between us and the divine. Laughter is good. Now, I don't know that I want to get into surfing the web too much, but I certainly want to remember to laugh in these days. I want to remember that it's a spiritual quality, that it's a way of opening our heart, of connecting to God, of feeling joy. And in those moments of the experience of happiness in the best possible way. You know, I love that saying of Yogananda's. He says, if you want to be happy, nothing and no one on earth can make you unhappy. And if you want to be sad, nothing and no one on earth can make you happy. But he's not talking about those momentary experiences of happiness, like ha-ha, laugh happiness, that most people know. He's using that word as the experience of joy. If you want to experience joy, nothing and no one on earth can keep you from it. So I would say to all of us, in these moments of such seriousness, and there is a lot to take seriously, of course there is, we need to be smart right now. We need to pay attention. We need to be wise in the choices that we make. We need to be compassionate. We need to be making choices that will help us take the best care of each other. Some of those are going to be hard choices. So we're not simply laughing our way through this, but we are making sure that we don't forget that coexistence of joy in the world, and that we as humans can use laughter as the connecting link to that joy, not just above, but everything I am, you are too, Jesus said, but to that joy within ourselves.